You're listening to the First Half Parenting Podcast, hosted by Paul and Sherry Peterson.
All right, good evening. My name is Paul.
Well, hi, Paul.
Hey. Who are you?
And I'm Sherry.
And you're Sherry. And we're the Petersons. Oh. So we are in episode number 5. Can you believe that, babe? We've done 5 episodes of this podcast.
Really?
Yeah, this is our 5th one.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Yep.
Soon we're gonna get pretty good at it.
Well, we'll see.
So hey, listen, welcome to the podcast. If it's your first time here, welcome. This is First Half Parenting, where we believe there are 2 halves to the parenting journey. The first one starts the moment baby's in your arms, and it wraps up around somewhere around the beginning of the end of elementary, the beginning of middle school, and then you move into the second half. And we've done this 6 times. We have 6 kids from ages 20 to 12, and somewhere along the line we realized, like, oh my gosh, like, we have to change the way we're parenting, because the way you parent the second half is completely different than the first half. So this is us discussing some of the lessons we've learned and sharing them with you, some of the scars we have, sharing them with you. And so I just want to say right up front a big thanks to all of you who have reached out, sending your questions, sending your kind words to us. We genuinely appreciate that. If this is helpful for you, share it, please. We want to help other parents enjoy the first half parenting experience. So let's get started, babe. Today we're going to talk about the 4th baby step in the first half parenting journey. But before we do that, let's have a little fun. What do you say?
Okay.
You like to have fun, love?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, let's have some then. A few years ago, I read a book by John Maxwell called The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. If you've not read that book, it's definitely worth your time. The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. And as I read this book, I was inspired to make my own list of irrefutable laws. I like to call it the 21 irrefutable laws of parenting. And so here we go. Law number 1. Someone will poop right when you're late and running out the door. Is that true?
100%.
Yep. I mean, it rarely happens when you're just sitting around with nothing to do. They wait until you're like scurrying out the door to fill it up. Yep. Rule number 1. Rule number 2. Someone will run naked into your living room when you're entertaining guests. And we're talking about children here, keep in mind.
Yes. Yep.
Number 3. Someone will throw your cell phone into the bathtub at least once.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Or the toilet. Yeah. Some body of water.
Yes.
Yeah.
There you go.
Rule number 4. Someone will hide your keys and forget where they are. If you have not experienced this yet, just wait. It's going to happen. Number 5. Someone will make funny comments about, quote, certain body parts publicly.
Oh.
We've got some good stories there, don't we? Oh my gosh, that's embarrassing. Number 6, rule number 6, the irrefutable laws of parenting, you will have to touch poop. Number 7, you will be the couple no one wants to sit to next, or I'm sorry, you will be the couple that no one wants to sit to in the restaurant at least once.
Sit next to. Yeah.
I killed that one, didn't I? But you know what I mean. You know my heart.
Yes.
Okay. And it's true, right? I mean, I think we talked about this before, but we were like, before we had kids, we're like, we're never going to be those people. We'll discipline our kids. Rah, rah, rah. And then we had kids and we're like, oh my gosh, we're those people. Okay. Rule number 8. You will feel like quitting at least once.
Yep.
Yeah.
Got some good stories around that one.
Yeah. So, hey, if you're a parent of young kids, and you're struggling, hey, it's one of the irrefutable laws of leadership or laws of parenting. You will feel like quitting at least once. Number 9, you will have to continually evaluate and revise your parenting style.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as you, and we're going to talk about that a little bit today. As you, as your kids age, you will absolutely have to revise and adjust your parenting style. Irrefutable law number 10, you will wonder whether or not spanking is the best option.
Yeah.
We, for some of our kids, it was the best option. And for others, it just simply was ineffective. Mm-hmm. It was either not enough or it was just entirely too much. So we constantly had to wonder, you know, and I would just say you can replace spanking with your, you know, whether it's timeout or grounding them or whatever. You will question your parenting, your discipline style. You'll ask if it's the best option.
Mm-hmm.
Rule number 11, they will act like you. And whether you like it or not, that's true. You're going to see it. You will see yourself more in your kids than you will see the truth of you in your kids.
Mm-hmm.
Rule number 12, they will accept your apology. I don't think I've ever apologized to my children and they did not forgive me. So if you're a parent, just keep that in mind. Rule number 13, they will make you laugh. Rule number 14, they will teach you about grace. If you don't know what grace is, it really means that they give you something that you don't deserve. And there have been plenty of moments where I received from my children things that I didn't deserve. I hadn't been super kind and I got a big hug.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't been super engaging. And they were like a little puppy when I walked in the door, just happy to see me with lots of love. They will give you grace and they will teach you about grace. Rule number 15, they will come up with the most creative places to hide food they don't want to eat.
Yep.
What's the most creative place we found food that we didn't, that our kids didn't want to eat?
I think like under the deck of our house.
Yeah,
do you remember that?
Those boiled eggs under the deck.
Oh my goodness. I would go out there to like weed or something and oh my word, I'd find boiled eggs under the deck.
That's funny. Hey, here's rule number 16. At least once, they will cut their own hair with sharp adult-only objects.
Yeah.
Every kid,
yep.
They're going to cut their own hair. Irrefutable law number 17. At least once, they will get a bruise that looks for sure like child abuse. Remember those?
Yeah.
I swear to God, I don't beat my children. Rule number 18. At least once, they will make you curse, at least in your head. Hey, did you ever curse when you were parenting young children?
I don't know that I cursed, but I was very unpleased.
Did I ever curse, babe? Let's move on. All right. Rule number 19. At least once they will throw themselves screaming to the ground in public.
Yes.
Yes, that's going to happen. Rule number 20. At least once they will make loud, obnoxious body noises and people will think it was you.
Yep.
And finally, irrefutable laws of parenting. Number 21. Being a parent is the highest title of honor and the best experience ever. Even God chose to refer to himself as Father. Yeah, that's pretty significant.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just say, depending on what stage you're in, you may have laughed or cried as we talked through that list. But deep down inside, you probably felt a spark of hope. And that was, I'm not the only one. Like every parent goes through this stuff. So we just want to say to you parents, like, be encouraged. Hang in there. We are on a parenting journey. So let's get into it. Baby step number 4. Babe, would you kindly remind us of the 6 baby steps?
Kindly? Okay. So number 1, you want to take care of yourself. Number 2, you want to create a great environment. Number 3, you want to become the teacher. Number 4, you want to get a PhD in your child. Number 5, you want to learn how to discipline. Number 6, you want to call mulligans.
Yeah. If you don't know what mulligans are, if you missed the first, well, we've talked about the first 3 in our podcast, previous podcast. So if you're interested in any of those, check those out. But next week or next podcast, we'll talk about learning how to discipline, effective discipline. So excited about it. But today we're going to talk about getting a PhD in your child. So, excuse me. When I graduated with my first master's degree, I considered working towards a PhD in theology. Now, the PhD stands for Doctor of Philosophy, and it is the highest degree offered by universities. So someone who has a PhD is considered an expert in his or her area of study. And I began to explore what the next 4 to 6 years of my life would look like. And the more I researched it, the more my enthusiasm began to leak. Because the more I dug into this, the more I realized that these people are hyper-focused experts on a very small thing. Like they're very focused. They're an expert on a small area of study. And I like bouncing around. I mean,
imagine that.
Yeah, I know. Some people might call it ADHD or something like that. But the idea of being that focused for that many years was just destructive to me. So it basically meant that I would need to become intimately familiar with all of the ins and outs of that topic and possess a knowledge about that topic that was paralleled by hardly anyone else in the world. Like, I would be the expert on that specific topic. I'd be an expert because I decided to give it all of my attention and energy and focus. Mm-hmm. And honestly, that didn't sound good to me, so I decided not to pursue the PhD, and instead I did some other graduate work in the area of leadership, and then we had kids. And what we realized is that kids, at first it's crazy, it's fun, it's loud, it's messy, but it's simple. It's just simple. Like, you feed them, you clean them, you entertain them, and honestly, that doesn't take much. It's weird noises and tickle time, you know? It doesn't take a lot. It's simple. But the older they get, the more complicated and nuanced each child becomes. And we realize that at some point that what used to entertain them now embarrasses them. It would be inappropriate for me to, you know, tickle and make goofy noises for my middle schooler. You know what I'm saying? That just doesn't work anymore. That would be embarrassing and weird. So we had to stop, slow down, and study each child. We literally had to become an expert in each one of our child. And you know what we realized? They're all different. That's you, babe.
Yeah. Well, you know, as you're talking, I was sitting here thinking, like, I feel like even as a baby, you begin to figure out who they are. Because each child, I mean, I remember, you know, what some of the first two did was different from what the next two did. And how they wanted to be, you know, coddled, or, you know what I'm saying? Like, how they wanted to be put to sleep, you know? Like, I mean, they kind of, you know, when they hit that older infancy age, you know, things began to change a little bit, you know? So I feel like even beginning to learn your kid, and it's really interesting now, you know, one of our children, I remember when they were 12 months old, I had started to try to wean them from nursing, and they didn't want to stop. And typically I had done that with my other kids, and, you know, started to wean those feedings and put them more on the bottle at a year old. And I remember, you know, putting them to bed, and they would cry. You know, I still did the routine of holding them and giving them the bottle, and they would take it. But when I put them to bed, they were not satisfied. That child wasn't. And so it was interesting that I did that. We had this discussion. Yep. Like, I'm like, I don't know that this is worth. I kind of had to evaluate. Just because I did that for the first couple of children didn't mean it was what would work for all of my kids. So this particular daughter, I had to kind of sit back and say, I don't know that this is the right timing for this individual. And so I went back to, it was like, I think I'd done it for maybe a couple of days, and I went back to nursing her at night to put her to sleep, and it had stopped. Do you remember that? Like, yep. She yep. then like was okay. And it was interesting because I had done it for maybe 3 more months and she was ready to stop. But that same child, even to this day, is very much hands-on. Like, she loves to be, like, just physical, you know?
Very affectionate, yeah.
Yeah, very affectionate, very physical. And so I think, you know, even as that little infant, you can start to figure out, they give you little cues about just who they are and what they desire and need. And, I mean, you don't, now looking back on it, I wouldn't have necessarily realized that she'd have been an affectionate child, but because of where I see her now, I realized that she was an affectionate child, that she was showing me that was who she was. So it's interesting. I feel like you can begin to pick them up pretty early as to what kind of a, you know, a person or an individual they are.
So I think we can pick them up now because we have the benefit of hindsight. We can look at them now at, you know, 18 years old and say, oh, I see those characteristics when they were one or two. But when they were one or two, we would have had no clue
But I recognized there was something different. And I think I think that as a parent, you can start to realize, because I remember saying to you, I don't think she's done
right
necessarily with just not being really, really close. And you know, even though I was giving her a bottle, I think she still wanted that close affection. And so I think, you know, if you look close enough, and if I would have maybe heard or known this sooner, I would have picked up on that she is a very affectionate child.
And I think, you know, the cool thing that you did was you recognized this one's different. This one is different. And I need to treat her accordingly. And, you know, we're going to talk about this in a minute, but some parents have a one-size-fits-all mentality. And that is, you know, what I do for my first child, I'm going to do for my second child, I'm going to do for my third child. Or, you know, they may also have a mentality like you. You know, typically you cut off nursing at 12 months and... In this instance, you realize this one is not ready, so you treated them differently. And that is the point. Like, as a parent, you literally have to be you have to have a PhD in your child. You've got to be an expert on that. You have to know this child in such a deep way, unlike anyone else in the world.
Yeah.
Like, you are the expert on this child. And we're going to talk about how that works in just a little bit. That's a great example, babe. But the truth is, the older your child gets, the more effort it takes to know them.
Yes. Yeah.
They just become more complicated. They become more nuanced. They begin to think. They begin to articulate. And it's massively important that you as the parent make the effort to know your child. Because the more you know your child, the more likely you are to be a good parent. And that really is the whole goal of first half parenting, is to parent them well. And the only way you can do that is if you really know your child. And we're talking about how to do that in a minute. But there's a proverb that for Sherry and I was incredibly significant in our parenting journey. And that some of you may have heard this. If you're religious, you probably heard this. If you're not, this is still a great proverb. Listen to this. Proverbs 22:6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it." Train up a child in the way he should go. Now, here's the truth. Every child has a way. Every person has a way. And the job of the parent is to find their child's way. And I mean, we've just talked about it. Some children, like, they're going to like music. And other children are going to be absolutely a disaster when it comes to music. Some children will work with their hands. Others will prefer books. Some children are adventurous and they're going to take risks. Others are massively risk-averse. Each child has a way. And this proverb says that we ought to train a child in the way that this child should go. They bring their way with them into the world. When they come into the world, they have a way. And the job of the parent is to identify that way and then raise them in that way. So if your child is a risk-taker, help them to embrace courage. If your child is more of a reader, help them to pursue and live out that way in its entirety. That's a really, really big deal. Babe, weigh in on this, and then I want to read a quote here from Chuck Swindoll.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you were saying about figuring out what their way, like, I think for me, like, for us in general, like, we allowed the kids to explore. Like, I think to put all of your kids in one box, and for instance, like, I know at one point we had all of our kids in gymnastics, which that's not a bad thing. But I think then to say, you know, once that child had tried it and they're like, yeah, I don't know that that's really me. And then you keep pursuing, no, I think you should stick with this. Or I think you know, maybe it's because it's convenient for you, or it's, you know, you just, maybe you want to see them be a gymnast. So you know, you keep all of your kids. I know families who are like, no, everybody's going to play a musical instrument. And I don't know that some of this is a bad idea, but I think for you to put years and years and years on them of something that really is not their way is could almost be forced by the parent and it not be a benefit for the child.
Yeah. No, so listen to this.
So figuring that out is really important.
This is like Chuck Swindoll must have talked with you before he wrote this.
I didn't know what you were going to... Yeah. That's funny.
It's a great book. He wrote a book called Parenting from Surviving to Thriving. And he said, "We receive our children from the hand of God. not as soft, pliable lumps of clay ready to be molded into whatever we think they should become. Each child comes with a set of abilities, intellectual capacity, and a way of perceiving and thinking, all of which were endowed by God. We can surely influence and even mold them to a certain extent, but our efforts have limits. That's big. Our efforts have limits. On the one hand, if a parent ignores or discourages a talent, it may never emerge.
Yeah.
That's scary. If I ignore my child's way, if I ignore their talent or ignore just a passion, that may never fully emerge because I, as a parent, didn't do my job and get a PhD. He continues. On the other hand, if a parent cultivates a talent, it will likely become a part of the child.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we could give a personal example of where we didn't cultivate a desire that one of our kids had. And to this day, you know, I wonder, you know, she was young and,
gosh, yeah,
and wanted to perform and play for us. And we play, you know, play a guitar for us. And we were so busy. It wasn't like, no, we don't want you to do that. No, we, you know, it was literally, it's heartbreaking to me to look back at it now, but it was just, we were so busy that we did not nurture that. I mean, that her eyes lit up when she said that, and we didn't nurture that desire. And, you know, you can't go back and, you know, you can't go back and change that, but you kind of do wonder what would have happened if we would have,
put that aside, puts a lump in my throat because I remember we're going to like stage a little concert and she was going to be the star.
Yeah.
And we just didn't do it. And to this day, she doesn't do music. And I often wonder if there's a caged bird inside her that desperately wants to sing that doesn't sing because we just missed the way. And I, you know, that breaks my heart to some extent. We've talked about it with this child. We've worked through it.
Right.
But I still wonder.
You don't know. I mean, maybe it would have been just a fun thing that would have happened, but, you know, maybe it wouldn't have been. You just have no idea. So a word out there, you know, busyness can steal and rob from our children in knowing their PhD.
Oh,
and
gosh.
I just think that we have to slow down and we have to make time because honestly, whatever that, I don't even remember what we were busy with, but you know what we remember?
Yeah. Yep.
The thing that we missed that should have been a big deal. And so, you know, whatever you're busy with, probably, you know, 10, 15 years from now, you won't even remember it, but you will remember the moment that you decided to engage in your child and see if that was their way. And who knows, maybe it is their way. So. Yeah. Just encouragement there.
So I will tell you this, and we're going to talk about this a little bit later too, but parents who do not take the time to become experts on their children and discover their way will likely parent with a one-size-fits-all approach. Like, they're just going to be like, this is what I know as parenting. Like, every child is going to do a sport. Every child is going to do music. Every child is going to... And if you begin to find that you're making every child do what every other child in your home does, you're parenting with a one-size-fits-all approach, and you're probably missing your child's way. Your child comes into this world with a way, their way, right? And it was given to them by God, and it is their way. And your job as a parent is to become an expert in that child, to discover that way.
Yeah, to help them figure it out.
To help them figure it out, and then to help them live their way.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's big. So, and Swindoll says, look, you find their way or you will discourage and destroy them with your one-size-fits-all approach. It's a big deal. So, you know, how do you figure out their way? How do you figure out your child's way? You probably can see, honestly, with just a quick glance that your children aren't, they're different. Each child is different. But how do you know what their way is? So, back to the Proverb chapter 20, verse 11 and 12, you probably have heard at least verse 11 says, even children are known by the way that they act, right? You can tell a child by the way he acts. And then the very next verse says, we are given ears to hear and eyes to see. Both are gifts from the Lord. Mm-hmm. And I actually think that sentence right there was meant for parents. Parents, you have been given ears to hear and eyes to see. And this is how you know your children's way.
So, I mean, I just have to jump in here too. Again, I mean, like, in order to see and hear, you have to slow down.
Slow down.
Parents, put the phone down.
Oh, my
Parents,
gosh.
Turn the TV off. You know, like, you've got to see and be and hear your children. And a lot of times we don't see and hear our kids because we're catching the next... You could be catching the next parenting podcast. You know what I'm saying? Like,
hey, don't use that as an example.
Well, you, I'm just saying, like, there are moments that your kids need you, and I feel like sometimes we just like run past them because we're busy. There's so many things pulling at us today, and I think as a parent, we've got to, you know, your job could be pulling you, just the demands. But I think if we can just like when we're with our kids. If we can give them us.
Yeah.
That's what we need to see and hear them.
Give them your ears and your eyes.
And
like,
you will
literally
know.
Literally listen to them and look into their eyes. Like,
yeah.
Give them your ears and your eyes. And you will know their way. Because they're telling you their way. In fact, again, I want to quote Chuck Swindoll. Super helpful in this chapter here. But he said, your children are making themselves known every day.
Mm-hmm.
Do not drift. Do not let your senses get dull. Do not ignore what you are hearing and seeing. Pay attention to your children while they're at play. Carefully observe what they do, how they do things, and what they enjoy. Those are eloquent clues frequently repeated, so pay attention. When you see your children do things well, encourage and affirm them. If children clearly enjoy particular kinds of activities, provide more opportunity to explore them. And as children experiment, give them plenty of room to fail and try something else without a single word of condemnation and without calling attention to the mess or criticizing the expense. Oh my gosh.
Yes.
That is the key right there.
Yes.
Eyes and ears. I'm listening. Mm-hmm. I'm watching. I'm looking for your way.
Yeah.
Like if I was a student, a PhD in a PhD program, I would be doing incredible research. I'd be like digging into the weeds because I want to be an expert on this subject in which I'm doing my PhD research.
Yeah.
And my job as a parent is to be that intense when it comes to studying my child so that I can know their way so I can help them become a great adult.
Yes.
It's huge.
Yep.
So there's a couple Bible stories, and again, I know some of you listening to this are not religious. Faith is a huge part of our paradigm, and so it's a big deal. But these stories, I think, will be helpful. One is the story of Jacob and Joseph. And I don't know if you know The Prince of Egypt, right? You've seen the movie The Prince of Egypt. The story is Joseph, as a young boy, you can read about it in Genesis 37 if you haven't. But he had dreams of greatness. He would come in and tell them of these dreams he had. In fact, one time he said he literally had the dream about being the most powerful person in the room. And in these dreams, his brothers, all 11 of them, that's a huge family, they were bowing down to him. And so were his parents. And so Joseph tells him this dream, of course. And then everybody's irritated with him and they're aggravated. How inappropriate, how offensive, you're the youngest. So he ticked off his entire family. But what happens next is important. So his dad pulls him in and he begins to, you know, talk to him about, hey, your presentation was a little rough there. You know, you just offended all your brothers and yada, yada, yada. But in Genesis 37:11, it says, but he kept these things in his mind. He saw Joseph's way and he kept it in his mind. It was a little irritating. It was a little aggravating the way Joseph was conducting himself. But his father saw something there. He kind of held it in the back of his head. He had a parenting moment. And even when his son was saying and doing some things that were annoying, Jacob saw some things that were insightful, clues to Joseph's way, and he kept them in his mind. And if you know the story, if you've seen the movie, you know that in fact, Joseph did become the most powerful man in the room, and his brothers and parents did in fact bow down to him.
Yeah.
And I would bet that when that happened, Jacob probably remembered that moment,
mm-hmm.
right? Because there's clues along the way. And kind of irritating, but there's clues. I want to come back to that. The second story is written about Jesus. He's a boy. You can read it in the biography of Jesus written by Luke. Luke chapter 2, verses 41 through 52. Every year, Jewish families would go to Jerusalem for this big religious festival. And Jesus' parents were Jews, and so they did that. They went to this big festival. And after one particular festival, Jesus was 12, they headed home. And after a couple days, they realized they hadn't seen Jesus. At first, they weren't worried because they thought he was hanging out with family or friends. But a couple days later, they realized, we still haven't seen him. We haven't even heard from him, right? And so they begin to get worried, which you should if you haven't seen your 12-year-old in, you know, 3 or 4 days. So even if it's Jesus, right? What's he up to? So they went back back to Jerusalem, and they found him in the temple, in the church. And he was deeply engaged with scholars and pastors, teachers, you in a theological conversation. At age 12, Jesus should have been in over his head with the kind of conversations he was having. But he was not. In fact, the kind of conversations he was having with these people, he was blowing their mind. Luke 2:46 says, they were amazed at his understanding and his answers. It turns out that he skipped out on his family. He'd gone back to Jerusalem in order to engage in these theological discussions. And his parents were concerned, maybe even aggravated. When they finally found him in the temple, they chided him for not staying with them. They're like, where were you? You should have let us know. Like any parent would do. Like right. We've done, right? But in Luke 2:51, Mary, in the midst of all this, says she treasured all these things in her heart. She held on to them. Mm-hmm. In the middle of this aggravating moment, she saw something, maybe his way.
Yes.
And so if you don't know the rest of the story, Jesus would later become a key player in every theological discussion, right? And yet Mary, what she did was she kept this thing in her heart. She saw a clue. And so years ago, I had about an insight. And I'm going to stop. I've really been talking here a long time.
It's good.
I'm going to tame it down here a minute.
It's good.
A few years ago, I had an insight about kids that I've since referred to as aggravating greatness. And that is, as I reflect on the stories of Jacob and Joseph and Mary and Jesus, it was in those moments where the kids were their most irritating and aggravating that the clues to their greatness were being revealed.
Yeah.
It was in the moment where dad and mom were like, what are you doing? Like, you got to stop irritating everybody around you. It was in those moments where aggravating greatness was being revealed. And so I would just simply say to you parents, it could be that in those moments in which your children are irritating you the most, they're also revealing their way. The way they need to be loved, the way they need to express their frustration, the way they need to express their curiosity. In those moments, I call them aggravating greatness. They could be revealing something to you. Don't be so busy. Don't be so frustrated that you miss the cues, the clues.
Yes.
Okay, I'm gonna stop talking here for a minute. Babe, take it away.
I think that's it's great. Like, yes. Yes, we can get caught up when they're inconvenienced to us. They're, you know, I mean, it was a huge inconvenience to go back to Jerusalem, right?
Right.
And, you know, we could go on and on about how frustrated and how upset and how mad and, you know, and of course it's that, but when you see what was taking place.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, I feel like in the midst of maybe those moments that we could have with our kids, you know, I was thinking, actually, we had just talked about this a couple weeks ago about, you know, our kids, one of our kids just is very much a people person. Like, just, I mean, from little on up, just people. Like, she just loves people. And we were just like, no, you need to take time for yourself. Like, you don't need to always be around people. Like, it became just this contention between us. And I remember saying, I just had this moment where I was like, oh my goodness, like, maybe instead of us discouraging the people so much, we should recognize this as a gift that she has.
Yeah.
That she blesses people so much, and can be this who knows what she could be, right? I mean, this huge example to the people that she's around. She could be a leader. She could, I mean, the sky's the limit with that. And so trying to figure out, instead of taking that to a fault, like we had just been like, oh my word, how many times does she have to go to this friend's house? Or, oh my word, you know, she wants to participate in this activity with this friend, or recognizing, oh my goodness, maybe
this might be her way.
Maybe we have somebody on our hands that is going to lead people.
And then we've got another one right now that's, you know, very content to just be alone and read.
Yes, but she's very scholarly.
Yeah, no, gosh.
Very scholarly. So, I mean, I think the things that might be just like irritating to you, if maybe like you just were saying, aggravating, you take it and you look at it and go, huh. You know, maybe there's preparation for this to be in her future, right?
Yeah.
This to be like this amazing person.
I think, you know, when we're just talking about that, like how, because we've talked a little bit, multiple times actually, how busy parents are likely to miss the clues. They're likely to miss their child's way because their eyes and their ears are in other places. They're listening to other things. They're looking at other things, and their kids get about 20% of their attention. You know what I'm saying? They talk to their kids while they're staring at their phones, or they talk to their kids while they're sending out an email, or they'll go to their kids' game and they'll sit there and do business on their phone, and their kids are not getting their eyes and their ears.
Yes.
And that's how you will find your child's way, is your eyes and your ears. You listen and you watch.
Yeah.
Right? And so I just want to give you a super practical tool that will give you everything you need to understand your child's way. I mean, here's the truth. Life is busy, but parenting is important, right? Life is busy, but parenting is important.
We say it. It's like one of the, it's one of the greatest things we could do. You read that at the beginning of this podcast, you know,
yeah.
Parenting is it's the most important thing we do in life.
Well, it is, because we're raising the next generation.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yep. So I will tell you something that worked for us. If I want to be a great parent and I want to have great adult children, I have to invest time, and I have to do it now.
Yes.
I have to do it while they're young. And, because that's how you get a PhD, right? It takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
And so the best way that worked for us, I would say, is that I particularly dated my children, every daughter, every week.
Well, I think that you did it more often because you were working out of the home and I was in the home. So that was...
Right. That's absolutely...
I mean, I took them occasionally, but it was more so you because... I mean, I could take them to a little park and spend one-on-one time, or, you know, like that kind of thing. Whereas you didn't really get that opportunity.
You definitely had more time with them.
Right.
Right. And so, maybe we ought to just say, if you're working parents,
right.
If you'd, like, you schedule that time.
Well, and I feel like if you're not getting the time, so like if I wasn't, you know, I was getting the time. So it's, if you're not getting the time, you need to schedule the time.
Right.
Yes.
And you said a key word, a schedule. So we put it in our budget. Our time budget, which is our calendar, and our budget, which is an Excel spreadsheet, right?
Yeah.
So, and the variety over the years has been huge. I remember at one point in our life, we didn't have a lot of money. We still don't have a lot of money, do we? Right? But we didn't have a lot of money.
But it's not, remember, it's not about
it's
the money.
It's not about money. So listen to this. Our budget was $1, and the time was 30 to 60 minutes. 30 to 45 minutes was our time block, right? And $1. But you would be blown away by how much could happen in that little bit of time. Let me just give you some examples. We would go down to Wendy's.
Which was literally 3 minutes away,
right? 3 minutes away.
I mean, it was close.
And we'd buy a 99-cent Frosty and we'd play Memory.
Yes.
Or we would we'd go get that Frosty and we'd play Truth or Dare, which led to a ridiculous amount of embarrassing stories, right? We would have a car party. Like, we'd get in the car and we'd ride around for 45 minutes and we'd turn up the radio and sing as loud as we can. And you'd be surprised at how much they want to talk in between songs and the things that you learn about your child because they talk.
Yeah.
We'd pick up some toys and we'd go to a quiet place and we'd play, you know? And we'd get on the ground with them. I get to see what they see. We would make videos, right? Some of them we would post on social media and some we wouldn't. But we made videos. We'd go swing in the park. We'd go to a flower garden and sniff flowers. We'd go to the dollar store, right?
Yeah.
And the list goes on and on. But the truth is that when you're in those moments, you let your child pick, and oftentimes, not every time, but oftentimes we let them say, hey, what do you want to do for a date? And sometimes you own it as the parent, right? It's the right thing to do.
Sure.
But when they tell you what they want, you'll begin to learn something about them, right? Listen to what they want. Watch what they do. And you'll see clues to your child's way along the way.
Well, did you say that? I mean, that was a week. You did that once a week, right?
Once a week.
With each child.
With each child.
Yeah. Yep. So they knew. It was great. They knew that they had your undivided attention once a week.
Yes.
For, I think it was close to an hour.
Yeah. I mean, I remember it would range from 30 to 45, maybe 60 minutes.
But it was they would look forward to it. I mean, they'd get home from school, you'd pick them up, you'd take them on a date, you know. And through that, you were able to teach them all kinds of really great things as well as find out who they were.
Absolutely. And yeah. So, I mean, as we begin to wrap up this podcast, we really are going longer every podcast that we go.
Well, you just talked quite a bit.
I did talk a lot, didn't I?
Yeah, I know. Good Lord. So that is your fault.
Right, yeah, I'll try to be more concise next time. So, I mean, the bottom line is this, like, if you're going to be a great parent, if you're going to raise a great adult, you have to have a PhD in your child. And here's how you earn your PhD. You use your eyes and your ears to discover mm-hmm. their way. Mm-hmm. You watch, you listen, right? And once you identify your way, you encourage them in that way.
Right,
If you have an artist, encourage that.
Yes.
Resource that. If you have someone who likes working with their hands, encourage that. Resource that. Don't make your mechanic son become a piano player. You're going to discourage and frustrate him greatly.
Right, right.
Yeah.
We were made for, each one of us has a purpose. And so.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, and the easiest way, I think, to do this, the easiest way to engage your children with your eyes and your ears is to schedule dates.
Yeah.
Like literally build time into your calendar. And honestly, Dad, it doesn't take a lot. It doesn't take a lot. We did it on a dollar in 30, 45 minutes.
And I would, you know, I would just mention this as well. There were many days you would come home and you would just be like, I do not feel like doing this.
Oh,
because you were exhausted. Like, right. So, you know, mom, dad, you know, you might come home and be like, man, I just want to like kick back on the couch or, you know, it's the last thing that you want to do. But how did you feel? I remember you walking in the door after doing this. And you would look at me multiple times and just say, I can't believe that I feel refreshed. I feel energized. I feel like you were amazed at the difference of how you felt when you came home versus when you left.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I will also say there were times that I didn't.
That you didn't what?
That I did not feel refreshed. There were times I left exhausted and came back exhausted. But now, as I look back, I'm so glad I went anyways.
Well, but I think the majority, you would come home a lot of times and say, I cannot believe the difference.
No, it's true.
So I just encourage you, get out there, love on your kids when you don't feel like it, you know. And it will pay dividends in the end, right? I mean, when you can help your kid discover who they were meant to be and be fulfilled.
Let me say this.
You know, it's...
and you, it may not be like you. And you may not even necessarily like their way.
No, no.
You know, if you're a sports person and they're a book person, you may not be totally comfortable with that. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. They're not you. You're you. You're a sports person. So you be you.
Yeah.
And let your child help them discover and live out their way.
Yeah.
It may be different.
Definitely not forcing. I mean, we've seen that happen where parents try to push what they want, their agenda, and it just doesn't work out well.
No, their kids end up broken, frustrated, angry, discouraged adults.
Yeah, yes. Trying to do what the parent wanted them to be and do.
Right. So, hey, listen, Dad and Mom, use your eyes and your ears to discover your child's way. When you discover their way, encourage them in it. Let them live their way. Help them. Guide them. Be the teacher. If you missed that podcast, go back to podcast number 4, which we talk about being the teacher. All right, be the teacher in their lives. Help them live out their way, because ultimately what you're doing is you're setting them up for success in adulthood.
Yes.
And that's really what this is all about.
Yep.
So.
Absolutely.
I think that's what I got, babe. You got anything else?
I think you have ran out of words. Oh, now, is that even a possibility? I don't know about that one.
So, hey, listen, be nice to me right now. Okay. We do have some resources for you, babe. You want to tell us about the resources since I've talked so much?
Oh, my. Nice. All right. Well, so you can find us on our YouTube channel. And we're also on our website at www.firsthalfparenting.com. You can find us on Spotify, Podbean, Apple Podcast, and you'll search for First Half Parenting on that.
And hey, so YouTube channel, like what do they look for when they go onto YouTube?
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious.
First Half Parenting.
Bingo, right there.
Seriously?
And how many videos do we have up?
On our YouTube?
Right.
Well, see, I used to have a husband that used to like record, but I don't know. He's lost he's lost the ability to record
it's
videos
not true.
Anymore.
We no, listen. That's stupid, babe.
I love it.
We recorded a video last time, and you, like, gave some bad data. We went back and researched it.
No, I know it's there. I just can't find it. It's a great video,
we
and I'm just like...
We want to be honest journalists.
Yes, I know. I've got to find that. It was a good video, but I can't...
It was a great video. It's just waiting. You got to find that data and confirm that data that you quoted.
Anyhow. I know.
Okay.
There is that.
That's what we got. Hey, we love you guys. You can send us questions. We want to hear from you. If this is helpful for you... let us know. Share it with a friend, right? Because we want to help other parents. It's a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let us, you know, send us your questions on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. You can email us at paul@firsthalfparenting.com. And I think that's what we got today. Babe, you want to send us home? You want to say anything on the way out? Send us home.
Yeah. Like, use your eyes and your ears and pay attention to your kid. Drop the phone. Turn off the TV. And, yeah, go encourage those kids in their way. What do you say?
Boom.
You're listening to the First Half Parenting Podcast, hosted by Paul and Sherry Peterson.